Welcome to another episode of the NBA Outlet Preview Series presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also, make sure you hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, on these preview pods, Corey Waldron and my good friend, Harris Wishard. What's up, guys?
Woohoo! We're on to the New York Knicks.
Man, hey, listen, it's great. It's great to be on today with you guys. But, you know, to see the Knicks at, 27, being here in New York and obviously struggled as of late and been out of the postseason for 4 years. But 27 is a new low, even for the Knicks, with Carmelo Anthony, who's been an all-star. So this is a tough one for a New Yorker.
Yeah, we'll talk about the ranking in a little bit. We're going to do a quick season recap and talk about last year. You mentioned it. You know, it's been a tough couple seasons for them. They finished last year 31-51. Some of the big free agent moves and offseason moves didn't really work out. What are your initial thoughts about the Knicks last season?
Initial thoughts have to be that they weren't the super team that Derrick Rose claimed that they were going to be before the season started. On paper, like, their starting five last year, if healthy, could have been pretty good. But then there was just absolutely no bench. You know, with guys like Lance Thomas, Ron Baker. I know Hermann Gomez gave him some solid minutes at times. Obviously, Joakim Noah, that contract, proved to be a horrible contract. It was a bad year for New York.
Yeah. I mean, for Derrick Rose to say that was a little bit ridiculous. We knew he wasn't going to be the same player. I know there were some Knicks fans that were texting me like, wait, you don't think he's going to be the 2011 Derrick Rose that, looked like one of the most explosive point guards we've ever seen. So, we knew he wasn't going to be quite like that. And I had mentioned to Nick that I thought him being exiting would benefit this team. I just thought this obviously wasn't the right fit. But 31 wins, obviously, when you get Carmelo, not in the prime of his career, but, still in his, low 30s. For him to be, 30 on a 31-win team is kind of tough. And, it's toxic, now that Phil Jackson's gone, but it's toxic for a guy like Kristaps Porzingis to kind of grow up on a team like this. So it's frustrating. I thought they'd be a little bit better than that. The high point and the nice point for this team last year to me was Hernan Gomez. I thought he was good. I thought he gave them some solid minutes. But like you said, Joakim Noah was really just a real freak show. 46 games. They had the PED. He's just not even close to the player that he had been in Chicago those years. So really just a frustrating year all the way around for the Knicks.
Yeah, I think that Joakim Noah is probably the most frustrating thing. And like you said, the offseason fits just didn't really work out. And even Derrick Rose, I wasn't really a big fan of that. I know last year we talked about a best case scenario, they could probably compete for the playoffs. But, worst case, they dealt with a lot of injuries, and that's kind of what happened. And the ball didn't really move well. You mentioned it. KP wasn't too happy about it. He showed his displeasure at the end, skipping his exit meeting. Then Phil Jackson offered to trade him to a few teams. So it was kind of crazy, but you mentioned it. Highlight. What was your highlight of the season, Corey?
I guess the highlight's just got to be Porzingis, because he answered a lot of questions going into last season that we saw his game evolve, I should say. We saw him get a little bit better shooting the ball. It looked like his rookie season that, near the second half of the season, he kind of tired out. Because playing over in Europe, they're not used to playing this many games. The NBA season, as we know, is very rigorous. It's very draining with the back-to-backs and the constant traveling. And I thought Porzingis really matured in his second year in the league. We saw a couple great blocks. We saw him stretch the floor a little bit more. And we saw him actually become a more overall sound player. And going into his third year, I have huge expectations for Porzingis.
Yeah, I expected those kind of things from Porzingis. I expect them to get a little bit better. For me, I'm going to agree with Harris. I thought Willie Hermann Gomez being a high second-round pick, coming in, showing he could be an above-average starter in this league potentially. And he definitely had a nice offensive touch on his game. The Knicks possibly have, their front-court duo of the future.
I'm not as high on – listen, I think Porzingis could be a really, really good player. I'm not ready to put him in the Hall of Fame yet. And I think that I'm just not as high on him as certain people are. I missed about 15, 20 games last year. I think he's going to be injury prone. I think that's just the way his body is. I don't think he's going to be anywhere near Dirk is what I hear some people compare him to. I don't think he's as talented offensively. And I think he could be better on the glass. definitely like has a good idea on the weak side as a shot blocker. And so that is a bonus. But I think if he's growing and if Anthony stays, I think that's going to hurt Porzingis in year 3 and 4. I think if he goes and you put a little bit more responsibility on Porzingis, I think that could be helpful for him. But like I said before, I think Hernan Gomez was a bright spot. I think guys like Kyle O'Quinn and Kuzminskis like play a little bit over their heads sometimes off the bench. But, you know, Baker was okay at times. But, you know, obviously there's just so many disappointments that it's so hard to pick the high point of the year. But I would have to go with Hernan Gomez.
I'll say one thing about KP. I expect him to maybe be a little bit injury prone for the first few years, but as soon as he hits like his mid-20s and low-20s, you know, you start to put on more muscle and more size, and I think that'll really, you know, give him an advantage with his athletic ability. And I agree. I don't think he'll be like Dirk because I think he has more of an all-around game in the sense that he's going to have a bigger impact defensively. I'm not saying he'll be the offensive talent that Dirk will be, but defensively he's going to provide a lot more value than Dirk ever did probably.
Nick, Dirk was an MVP in this league, though.
He was, but it wasn't based off his defensive ability.
But he dominated the game, though, on a consistent basis.
I'm not saying Porzingis is going to be better than him. I'm just saying his overall impact, and he'll impact the game in different ways than Dirk did, and I don't think they're the same player. I think that's just a lazy comparison of saying it's, you know, an international white guy who's going to shoot the ball.
I think it's just not easy to move at 7'3" sometimes, though. It's just not easy.
Yeah, but Porzingis moves really well for his size, and I think
he moves decent. I'm just saying, though, over the course of a career, it's not going to be the easiest task to play more than what he played last year at 33 minutes a game in 66 games. It's pretty hard. I'm not saying he's not a good player. I just don't think the ceiling is as high as some people think.
I think one thing to keep in mind when we talk about Porzingis as well is, you know, not that I like comparing as well, like you said, comparing Porzingis and Dirk, but, you know, Dirk played with some great point guards with Steve Nash, Jason Kidd. Like, he played with past first point guards who elevated his game. Porzingis has never had a point guard. I mean, Derrick Rose is a solid point guard to a degree, but he's never been a playmaking point guard. Derrick Rose is, I'm going to take the ball and I'm going to go make things happen. Porzingis has yet to have a guy on his team who facilitates for other people. That's the big issue we have with Carmelo, is Carmelo's a ball stopper. So I think, you know, comparing what Porzingis has done so far with no true facilitator on this roster is pretty impressive for a 21-year-old.
No, and listen, I want to see him on a winning team too. I want to see him be a leader. I want to see him be able to, you know, contribute to a good team, to a better roster. There's a lot that still has to, that take place. Like you said, he's only going into year 3. I'm just pumping the brakes a little bit. I want to see more. And like Nick has pointed out many times, we don't know what's going to happen with Carmelo. It's a very hard team to judge when clearly Carmelo is still a better player right now than Porzingis. That could change in the future. But for right now, Carmelo is still their most valuable player. We just don't know what's going to happen with him. So it's kind of hard to judge what Kristaps is going to be in year 3. And we don't know what's going to happen with Carmelo.
Yeah, we definitely don't know what this roster is going to look like within, you know, this roster could change within, you know, we saw another trade go through kind of quickly. Like a trade can pop up at any time and Mel could be dealt.
Yeah, especially when you see the big trades happened. And, you know, today the Kyrie was moved to Boston. We'll talk about that on another pod, but it just tells, you know, anything can happen. And usually when one star moves, another star is going to move because it just kind of pushes the blocks forward. I mentioned the Corey, you know, this could open up another trade possibly for the Cavs. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Biggest disappointment for the Knicks, I think this is probably an easy one. Who is it for you guys?
This is really easy for me. It's going to be Joakim Noah.
Yeah.
You know, you signed him to that 4-year, $72 million deal, and then he plays, a bunch of 30 games, 40 games. Yeah. He looks slow. He's no longer that defensive player of the year that we saw from the Chicago days. And now he's going to lock up the books because nobody's going to take a 32-year-old center who's breaking down year in and year out.
Yeah, and it's the obvious choice. But I also thought that Derrick Rose was probably the worst 18 points a game of all time in the history of the league. It was horrific. I'm telling you, Derrick Rose being off this roster, it's going to open up some things. I mean, and Nick and me had talked about. Listen, Ramon Sessions, we'll talk about that later. And the point guard play, but they had really bad point guard play last year. Listen, Derrick Rose averaged 4.5 assists a game, and Brandon Jennings was horrific. So this is there's a lot of them, but obviously I guess Joakim Noah is the obvious choice. But up and down the roster, there's a lot of disappointments.
Yeah, I think Joakim, though, is easily the worst choice just because of his contract. In the sense of what the Knicks expected him to bring, they expected him to bring some culture to the team, some defensive-minded players, and kind of be that leader on the floor. And obviously, when you can't play at a high level, you're not going to provide that for the team. And I think that really hurt the Knicks, and it kind of killed Phil Jackson, because that signing is, you know, the worst move that the Knicks made last season. And Corey mentioned it. They're locked up with the books of him. They're not going to
It was the worst move in the league.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the worst move for the Knicks. It was the worst move in the league.
Yeah, and that's probably the worst contract in the league right now, just because – you know, he's breaking down. No one's going to take that deal. To probably move Joakim Noah, I think it would probably take 2 first-round picks. Listen, just to do it as a salary dump.
MSG is obviously New York, and I have to watch, you know, the Knicks and the Nets come on my channels. But if I have to look at Joakim Noah's free throw for if I have to look at that for any more game, that's something that I think that's the most horrific thing in basketball right now, too, also.
Yeah, that is pretty bad. What was it last year? What did he do when he shot the ball one time? It, like, hit somewhere crazy. I remember seeing the vine. It was just like...
I think he hit the bottom of the backboard on a free throw.
Yeah. And then, like, everybody was just looking at it like...
He shot 44%, and it's the ugliest thing. Listen, if you're in a basketball camp, if you're teaching kids, just show them that and say, never do it. Just don't look at it. Don't do it. It's just the worst form release. It's just so uncomfortable to look at. And as a shooter myself back in the day, it's just a horrible – Joakim Noah needs to leave. I told Nick that also today. He really needs to go.
All right. You know, I'm a big Florida Gator fan, so, like, let's tone it down a little bit. No, I'm his glory days are long gone. But, yeah.
Listen, he used to play – the guy used to play really hard. And, listen, when he's on the floor, the effort and the energy is still not terrible. And he was a leader, and, you know, in the Billy Donovan days and even those Chicago days when I think he was an all-star, I think, at one point.
Yeah, he was. He won Defensive Player of the Year one year, too.
Yeah, so, yeah, those days are long gone, and it makes the Knicks tough because he's going to be gone for the first 10 games, I think, 10, 15 games of the year, and because of the PEDs that carries over. So maybe the Knicks can get off and do a decent start without him on the floor. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it'll kind of give him a better idea of being able to be like, you know, we're not going to play you because if we have any success in these 10 games, you weren't here. And, I mean, obviously his lack of offensive ability, the shooting is terrible. He's not the playmaker he once was. He doesn't move the same way. So I think, you know, it's tough to really play him. But let's move on. Let's move on to the ranking. So far we've had the Brooklyn Nets at number 30, Atlanta Hawks at number 29, Orlando Magic at 28, and now today the Knicks at 27. What do you guys think about this ranking?
How is Chicago still past these teams? Like that's my only – I mean, the Knicks are bad. Like, this is a fair ranking, but, you know, the worst team has still not been named for me in these power rankings.
What about your Harris?
I had him a little higher. Nick, I know you guys are going to hate this, but when Paul George leaves the Pacers, I mean, I don't know what the heck's going to go on with this team. I know Corey's in a you know, defend the Pacers and tell me all, you know, all the great things they did this offseason.
No. Yeah. Don't try and paint me like that.
No, but the Bulls, I don't know about the Suns and the Kings now and the Mavericks I mentioned today. I know the Mavericks won 33 games in the West last year. But if you guys are high as you are on Porzingis and Melo does stay, and like I said, Sessions a serviceable guard, and then my boy Tim Hardaway coming back to play shooting guard. I actually like Tim Hardaway. I don't know what you guys think, but I actually like Tim Hardaway. So I actually think they should have been a couple higher. Not too many slots higher, but a couple higher.
I think if Melo stays, probably a few spots higher. It's definitely, like Corey mentioned, they're definitely better than the Chicago Bulls, the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, not that they're that much better than the Pacers. I think they're around the same level of a team like that. I have them in, you know, the bottom of the East, you know, but the bottom of the East is going to be really crowded in the sense that, like, you could have a pretty bad season and still maybe be competing for the playoff spot. So, but like we mentioned like a million times already on this podcast, it all really depends on Carmelo Anthony. You know, obviously he's not the player he once was, but he's still an impactful offensive player. I was there at MSG last year when he hit the game winner against the Sixers. He can still do it. You know what I mean? It's just about being in the right situation. And Corey hit on a point before, and this goes for Carmelo as well. You know, his whole time in the Knicks, he hasn't really had a great point guard. The best point guard he probably played with was, you know, a washed up Chauncey Billups and a washed up Jason Kidd. You know, nobody on that team has really been able to set him up for success.
Yeah, because no one wants to go play with him. That's why.
I don't know about all that.
Or is it just the fact that the ownership has been so wretched and they have an owner who does not care about winning basketball games? That why would you want to go to a culture like that?
That's true.
Well, I think a report
I think it's more
that
about
came out this year
more than the players.
Yeah. There was a report this year that Chris Paul would have considered the Knicks if Phil Jackson didn't treat Melo the way he did during the season.
I was enjoying the Knicks. And listen, I'm not saying that Amari Stoudemire is a better player or has had a better career, but when I was enjoying the Knicks with that Chandler and Gallinari, and they had some decent chemistry for a while, Carmelo to me is not a guy that just doesn't encourage team first. It doesn't encourage chemistry. Doesn't encourage moving the basketball and playing in a system that can win in the NBA. And yes, there's a lot of one-on-one going around the NBA, but when I see him holding the basketball a lot on the perimeter and that jab step, he doesn't have a great basketball IQ, decent IQ, but not a great basketball IQ. Doesn't really move away, without the ball that well, and just one of the great talented scorers, but wing players, and I think that can maybe hurt teams that he's on and has hurt teams that he's on.
I think some of that is definitely true. I think some of it's on Carmelo, but some of it's also on the Knicks, because if you look back to, you know, the Knicks team that lost to the Pacers in the second round, you know, that team did move the ball well. Melo was a better team player, and when Melo plays in the Olympics, he's a better team player too. I think part of it is Knicks coaching. You know, we haven't really seen a great head coach in New York that runs a great system, and we also haven't seen a coach that really gets after Melo to be a better team player.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Nick, because a lot of the times when you look at, like, Olympic Melo and guys are like, oh, why can't he do that? Well, look at all the talent and all the guys that are surrounding him. It's a little bit different. But to me, I've always said this, I think he's got to be your second best player. I think there's got to be another guy there, another guy that's team first, another guy that's pass first, another guy that can allow Melo to take some pressure off of him. He doesn't have to take 20, 25 shots a game. And he could, like you said, play that Olympic style, play that, you know, that secondary style, and like the 54, I think the Knicks won 54 games that year, something like that. And they had an opportunity to get to the conference finals, and there was some decent talent around him.
You know, the one thing I feel like Melo nowadays is like underrated to a degree. Yeah. I mean, I just
don't
feel like
say that.
No, I really feel like we put a lot of hardship on Melo. Like, obviously, Melo no longer is the number one option on a team. I mean, 4 years ago, yes. But now, you know, now going into, you know, his 16th season. He's going to be 33. You know, he's obvious. Yeah, he's older now, and you know, he with the knee issues that he's had, the shoulder issues. Melo is obviously no longer number one issue. But I think, you know, in the right conditions, if he was to go to a team like Houston, I know that people want to say that that probably wouldn't work him, Harden and Paul. But Melo to Houston makes sense because Melo can play with superstars, like you said. When he plays with Team USA, they play good fundamental basketball. They share the rock.
That team is just so loaded. I mean,
it would be loaded too.
No, they're loaded. No, they would be. Yeah, the Houston is a different situation. Yeah,
and because they
point guard. He couldn't be selfish. He really couldn't be selfish because Paul would have the ball in his hands a lot. You're right. He hasn't really been around guys that need the ball in their hands a lot.
Except Derrick Rose, who's not going to make you better.
Well, Derrick Rose at the end, like after 17 knee surgeries, and no, that's why a lot of people I've heard this that they're worried about the development of Porzingis, because when the Knicks are trying to win games here, and Nick, you said this earlier today, they might be trying to lose games, but if they're trying to win games, it's probably going to be a lot of Melo, a lot of offense from him, a lot of isolation, and that's not going to help Porzingis develop into the player that he needs to become.
Yeah, that definitely could have an impact. One thing I'll say about that, though, it seems like Melo and Porzingis have a pretty good relationship, so I don't think Porzingis hates him, but like you said, it could impact him. I think Derrick Rose was probably the worst thing for Porzingis' development. Like Corey said, not a great passing point guard, not somebody who's going to make life easier for those guys, and not somebody who's going to facilitate the offense, really, so... But let's move on from Melo. We'll talk about him probably a little bit later. Let's go to this year's additions, and we'll start with the draft picks. Number 8 pick, Frank Ntilikina. What do you guys think about this pick at number 8?
Solid, but I don't want to say I'm like anti-European players, but like it just seems like these guys are, you flip a coin. They're either going to be something or they're going to be a role player who falls off within the next couple of years. I mean, this kid looks decent from the videos I've seen and everything else. He's quick. You know, he already got hurt, so we didn't see him in summer league. It's going to be, you know, he's 19 though, so no matter what, this is another project, another 3-4 year long project.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've read, like you said, you know, he's from Belgium. You know, he's quick, you know, 6'5", what is he, 190, 180, 190 or something like that. So
he's got good size to him. He's got really good size to him. I'll say that.
Yeah, he's got good size. You know what? No one's talking about him. I'll get, you know, nobody is talking about him in the rookie of the year and just having a good season and all that other stuff. So obviously the Knicks need an explosive guard. The Knicks need someone in the backcourt to make plays. They haven't had that in a really long time. Obviously, like we've said, Derrick Rose was not the answer. And the Knicks have not had a point guard. No, Stephon Marbury does not count. And Chris Duhon does not count, fellas. So they obviously need a point guard. Is he going to be the answer? I don't know. I know that a lot of people have liked the Dennis Smith Jr. pick for rookie of the year. So if you're going to light a fire under this kid and the motivation of, like I said, no one talking about him, the explosiveness of Smith Jr. and playing in that system in Dallas could lead to some highlights on SportsCenter and maybe the rookie of the year. But this kid is going to be motivated by I just don't hear anybody really saying much.
I think for him, he's a raw prospect. Go ahead, Corey.
I'm just going to say his European stats. I mean, he only played 19 minutes per game and averaged 5 points and 1.5 assists. So it's not like he didn't play that many, like that much time on the floor to really get a solid amount of work in to see what he can really do. That's just my opinion.
I think he's a raw prospect. I don't think we know what he's going to be. It's kind of a risky pick by the Knicks that could pay off. I mean, at worst case, he's a role player because of his frame and he could provide you a nice defensive point guard. But, you know, you really don't know. And I think at 19 years old, I don't think the Knicks are expecting a ton out of him this year. You know, I think that's why people aren't really talking about him as much is because they want to let him develop this year and not kind of rush him. You know, and just throw him out there in the NBA. Like Corey said, he's not super experienced. He hasn't ever played in the NBA. And this is going to be a different league, and he's going to have to adjust to the speed of the game. And that's something we always hear about international players coming to the NBA.
And you know what? Him and Porzingis will probably develop a nice rapport. But I'm interested to see how the PA announcer, the Knicks PA announcer, says the name. I'm a little interested to hear that.
Yeah, maybe give him a cool nickname.
The guy has a great voice, so I'm interested to – I can't say the name clearly. I'll try it. I mean, I know Nick, you got it, right? You got it down, right?
Yeah, Frank Ntilikina.
Jesus.
Yeah.
The end is silent.
Yeah. I only know that because of listening to draft podcasts and doing a few of those. But I want to ask, you guys mentioned Dennis Smith Jr., and a lot of people said they wanted the Knicks to draft Dennis Smith Jr. at that spot or Malik Monk. Do you guys think they should have went another direction, or are you okay with Frank Ntilikina?
No. I mean, I don't know. The bigger names were there. So if you wanted a bigger name draft pick, I personally would have went with either Monk or I would have taken Dennis Smith Jr. I would have gone with a guy who I saw a decent amount of work on a bigger stage personally.
How can we really know, though?
Well, we won't know. It's just an opinion.
No, I know. Just like it's just a hard thing for us, like, you know, being that I'm not a draft scout, but Dennis Smith Jr. is an explosive player from what I've seen, and he could be a solid NBA player. But you know, I've seen Greg Oden taken before Kevin Durant. I've seen Jimmy Fredette taken before Klay Thompson. I've seen a lot of crazy things happen in drafts. So it's hard. It's just a hard science, and you know. Hopefully, for Knicks fans, they got lucky with this one, and he pairs up with Porzingis because, like Corey said, Porzingis needs to play with a nice guard, and it's not going to be Ramon Sessions. Although Sessions is a serviceable NBA player, the Knicks need to put a guy next to Porzingis that's going to make him better.
One thing I can't say is, you know, we were all stunned by the Porzingis draft pick. You know, and we were all, and I mean, Knicks fans in particular were very critical of that draft pick, and now he has won over the entire city. And, you know, who knows? You know, the one thing Phil did decently well was drafting. You know, not that he drafted a bunch of stars, but he found Porzingis, he got Hermann Gomez. So maybe Frank is another, like, the last diamond in the rough that, you know, Phil Jackson leads with.
And you mentioned that it's Phil's pick too. And that's something that's important because this wasn't the new Knicks front office. So we don't necessarily know what they think of Frank Ntilikina. This is, you know, Phil's pick. And then he left after this. So it's kind of interesting that they let him draft.
Are you guys familiar with Michael Rapaport? You've heard about him?
Yeah.
He had the famous response about the Rapaport, Porzingis pick by saying they drafted who? And then a few words that I won't say on this podcast. And then he said he didn't have his green card yet, so he insulted Porzingis. And obviously we know how that turned out. So like you said, it's premature. We don't know what's going to happen, but I'm excited to see this kid play because he's athletic. I like watching athletic players and guys that can make plays off the bounce. And so maybe Dennis Smith Jr. will win Rookie of the Year. Maybe he'll stink. Who knows? Maybe the guy out in Philly will Fultz will win the Rookie of the Year. I don't know who's going to win Rookie of the Year. But
or Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons. Maybe this kid will put his name in the hat. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't think the Knicks are going to play him a ton early in the year. And maybe later in the season, if they go with that youth movement, like I mentioned to you off the pod, I could see them playing him big minutes because they want the development. Because I don't think he'll necessarily be there right away, but he'll just need to adjust the NBA. But let's talk about second-round pick, Damian Dotson. That was a solid pick. He had a solid summer league. He's a guard. We'll kind of see what happens with their second-round picks. You kind of never really know.
Yeah, it's tough to really know what you're getting out of a second-round pick because, you know, most times they're going to play majority of the time in the D-League, obviously. And you'll G-League. See them for – oh, G-League now, correct. Got to get used to that. You know, we don't see them for giant stretches normally. You know, maybe if a guy gets hurt, they get bounced up, or if, you know, the Knicks end up, you know, tanking, we'll see him. But, you know, he put up decent numbers in college. You know, he averaged 17.4 points per game. So – you know, having a shooter like that possibly on the floor can help stretch the floor. We knew the Knicks were very poor three-point shooting team last year. So, you know, they can add some guys who can shoot the long ball. It could probably help them in the long run.
The only thing I could say about him is that being that he's 23, that's old for it seems like in today's NBA, the draft pick, we know it, Frank is 19. Porzingis was, you know, a teenager. So it's rare that you pick a four, like probably played 4 years in college at Houston. And not a major college, but like you said, averaging 17, decent size to him as well, 6'5", 210. So I'm interested to see how many minutes he'll get. I actually think, and Nick, you mentioned about the minutes with Frank. I think he's going to get double-digit minutes in the first 10 games, though.
Yeah, I could see like double digit as in like 10, like in the 10 to the teens, depending. It depends on what the Knicks are trying to do and depends on, you know, Ramon Sessions and Ron Baker. You know, if they're both terrible, then obviously what's playing the young kid.
Yeah.
But let's move on to signings. Re-signings. We'll start with the biggest deal of the year for the Knicks, re-signing Ron Baker. I know Knicks fans, the Knicks fans were hyped about that.
You know, good old.
That's unnecessary. That's cruel.
Good old Wichita State alumni. I still love it. You guys haven't seen his college like senior photo. He has like actually an afro, like, and it's one of my favorite pictures of all time. Is Ron Baker with an afro? You know, it's a move that if you're rebuilding is perfect because you don't want to spend too much money. You got to rent Ron Baker for relatively cheap. And the one thing I can say about
Baker, he's making $4 million a year though.
That's pretty cheap, though.
That's not.
I mean, who else would pay him more, though? That's what I would say.
I mean, listen, kids, keep chasing your dreams. Ron Baker's making $4 million in the NBA.
You said I was mean.
And no, you I'm said just, I mean, was no, mean. Listen, Ron Baker plays as hard as anybody. I can't hate. I'm not trying to hate on him. I'm just saying, like, he's not going to – what kind of impact is he really going to make on a winning team? Like,
that's the thing. This isn't a winning team.
No, I understand that. But they're going to try to go forward.
No, they're not.
They're going to try to win.
No.
Yes,
this,
they are.
This team they're putting out here next year is no way, shape, and form are they trying to win with this team. They are not trying to win. I wouldn't be surprised if Courtney Lee gets traded at some point this season. Melo will not be on this team all season. I mean, this team is not trying to win. This is a team that's trying to get some young pieces around Porzingis. And a guy like Ron Baker, you like Ron Baker, he plays hard.
And tank for a draft pick?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I mean, what else are you playing for?
One thing about Ron Baker, Harris mentioned he plays hard, and that's always a good player. You might pay him a little bit extra, but it's always good for the culture. You know, not hating on him. Like, he plays hard every night. He goes out there. He's pesty. He might have a terrible haircut, but he still plays hard every night.
I saw Hornacek bench Rose on two separate occasions last year and put in Baker over Rose because Rose wasn't showing effort on defense.
And, you know, Baker's going to do what you tell him to do. He's not going to, you know, try to take terrible shots. He's going to set up his teammates and do what he's supposed to do. Obviously,
he was probably one of the few guys on this roster that actually studied in college.
Harris with the low blow today.
No, come on. You know, listen, if I met Ron Baker, I would dap him up and give him respect. I'm only kidding. I kid with this roster. Like, it's just frustrating. You know, they were 31-51 last year. You know, I know I don't want to take a low blow at the Nets, but the YES Network is not providing much better basketball either. And, you know, it's annoying because New York City, the Mecca, the Garden, you want to see a team that's going to, you know, you want to see an organization that's going to put a roster in the playoffs. So it's a little frustrating. So I'm just joking around with Ron.
Well, I'll say this about the Nets. They weren't as talented as the Knicks last year, but they definitely played harder every night.
They did. They got some players on their team that play hard. I'll give you that. That's true.
But let's talk about signings, and we'll talk about, you know, actually the real hype. Everybody, you know, it might be negative hype, positive hype. I don't know. It depends on what type of Knicks fan you are. Tim Hardaway Jr., 4 years, $71 million. Shoot.
I love it. Yo, you go first on this one, but you know, I really like to hear what Corey has to say about this.
For those who are listening to this as we release them, I've already talked about Hardaway Jr. on the Hawks podcast. Hardaway Jr. had a phenomenal season last year compared to where he has been. He was one of the best shooters on the Hawks. I watched him single-handedly beat Houston in Dwight Howard's return to Houston, where he scored 23 points out of 33 points and outscored Houston single-handedly in the fourth quarter to bring back the Hawks in a win. You know, the guy has definitely gotten better from his first stretch with the Knicks. The only thing I don't like is just it's another big contract. So now you have right around $100 million locked up between him and Joakim Noah. So you're not going to be able to add in a lot of talent around these guys.
Courtney Lee's contract isn't small either.
Oh, Courtney Lee, that's another big contract. You have a lot of money locked up. So I'm not thrilled by it because of another issue we've already touched on, the fact there's not a playmaking point guard. And don't tell me that
he's not a point guard.
No. Let me finish. Dennis Schroeder helped set up a lot of good looks for Tim Hardaway Jr. because he's a facilitating point guard and the attacking guard. The Knicks don't have those kind of point guards.
So now we're praising Dennis Schroeder.
I mean, Schroeder is still a solid point guard.
He's a better point guard than the Knicks have had in the last 10 years.
I'm trying to think.
I think
he's right. A wash Jason Kidd?
maybe Stephon Marbury in like 2004. 2005.
That's a little bit over 10 years, though. Not the
facility No, I know. Listen, the Knicks have been bad at the point guard position. I'll give you that. But Tim Hardaway is a much improved player.
Go ahead.
$16.5 million a year, a lot, yes. But I think – let me tell you a couple pros, I think. One pro, in the family. Obviously, we know about his father, what he did in the NBA. I think that helps. I think – sometimes people downplay that a little bit, but I think I don't know what his relationship is with his father, but I think having someone like that close to you, that had that much success in the league, can help you develop a little bit. So I actually look into that a little bit when I talk about like Curry having his dad, or this guy having his dad, or this other player. So I actually sometimes look at the family history, but I think he's improved a lot. I think he looks like he has a strong work ethic. Dwayne Wade even said something about he was in a workout with him and said Hardaway Jr. has looked like it was a couple years ago. But I just like his energy. I think he really cares. I think he's a guy that really cares. I think that's important to have in your locker room. Is he overpaid a little bit? Yes. Will he need a point guard next to him? Yes. Does he have the best handle? No. But he can get streaky. He can get hot. He can score a little bit. And it's going to be nice to have a third scorer, assuming that Carmelo starts the season and the Knicks are actually going to play basketball and try to compete. They'll have three guys that can go for 25.
I think the problem that most people have with this move is just the fact that Atlanta probably wasn't going to match. You know, they probably could have got him for a couple mil less a year. That's the issue, because Atlanta wasn't really like, oh, we really want to keep Tim Hardaway Jr. They wanted him talent-wise, but they didn't want to pay him money-wise. And I think that's an issue. I mean, I think, you know, obviously you could look at this as a high-risk, high-reward type move. Hardaway Jr. gets better and continues to improve. He definitely has to pick up defensively. That's a big issue for him, and kind of work on his all-around game. He showed he could score points last year, but he needs to be a better rebounder, passer, you know, just continue to improve all around. And maybe he can live up to the contract. He might end up still being a little bit overpaid. But the Knicks, at the point they are, they probably just want to try to bring in some young talent.
Yep.
You know, and some people might be like, you know, they shouldn't have brought him in at that contract, because they should have just kept cap space open, because they have other young pieces and they probably could have got him for less. And so I can see it from both ways. You know, the Knicks trying to get talent, you know, the pressure of New York trying to have a decent player, a decent young guy to put with Porzingis, potentially.
Do you remember the rumor that Anthony and Hardaway Jr., obviously, for the people who don't
know. It wasn't a rumor. No, I think it was, like, confirmed.
Yeah, you know, they're obviously, for the people who don't know, this is Hardaway's second stint with the Knicks. He was drafted by New York, and he started his career there before he moved over to Atlanta. So, and we know about, like you said, it could have been confirmed. I just heard it as a rumor. I didn't know if it was confirmed or not, that Anthony and Hardaway Jr. had an issue, and maybe that was some of the reason why he left. But obviously not too big of an issue if he's on the roster now. But maybe that, you know, Anthony on his way out. We don't know that. But, you know, these two guys had a little bit of a beef.
I do know that Hardaway Jr. has come out and said that he would like to play with Melo again. Like, he would like Melo to stay on the roster. But, you know, how much of that is, you know, PR and him just trying to say the right thing. So,
and like we said, there's a solid chance Melo might be on the team. So maybe the Knicks weren't even considering that. And earlier in the offseason, it almost seemed like a lock that he was going to get traded. And then all of a sudden, the Knicks decided they wanted more. But let's talk about another guy. You know, Tim Hardaway Jr., obviously a little overpaid. We'll see what happens with that contract. Michael Beasley, they signed him.
Oh.
They signed him, I think, maybe about a week ago. Thoughts on that? And he said that people will finally get to see what type of player he is because he just never had the opportunity. That's why he hasn't been the type of player that he was supposed to be.
Michael Beasley is one of those players who, when you see him shoot the ball, like, you want to just say like Kobe because he just has like the ultimate chuck it up kind of shot. It's not an awful move, but it's another guy who's not very good at sharing the ball.
This one, I actually tweeted at you guys know Ian Begley, the guy who writes for the Knicks, right? He actually was on one of the like early OTG pods a couple of years ago, but real good dude. I tweeted at him and like, what's the risk here though? What really is the risk here for a guy that's, I mean, like he said, he's a walking bucket. I don't necessarily think of him like that, but here's a guy that like. He was a second overall pick in the draft, was he not, at Kansas State, averaging 25 and 12 as a freshman? He had, like, one of the best college seasons I've ever seen. Now, obviously, that was a few years ago, and he was off the bench on a playoff team last year, and he played a little bit in the playoffs. I think the best game, I think he played one or two games in the playoffs, but I don't know, man. He's obviously not looking to pass, so if him and Melo are on the floor at the same time, that could be a little bit difficult for the other three guys, but I don't see why not. I mean, who cares? Bring him off the bench for a few minutes, see what happens. I mean, he was on, like I said, he played about 17 minutes a game for a team that made the playoffs last year.
I mean, I think, you know, one-year deal, it's not much of a risk. The only thing I would be concerned about is just the culture. You know, necessarily he hasn't always been considered a great locker room guy, or there's always been. You know, there's a reason that he's been on so many different teams in a short NBA career, and he hasn't really had a long stint anywhere. And that probably has something to do with he thinks that he's a walking bucket when he's really not. Not trying to throw any shade, because obviously you have to be confident to be an NBA player. But I think he needs to understand his role a little bit better. He's not going to ever be the player that he was expected to be at the second overall pick.
But with like Beasley and Porzingis, with Hardaway and Melo, like there's some decent offensive talent on the team. Like I think if they. If they're around 500 early, like Corey said, it probably makes more sense for them just to win 25 to 30 games and tank a little bit, get a better draft pick, probably move Melo at some point. But I could see them hanging around a little bit early and be a little bit better than people think early.
I mean, they did that last year to a degree. I mean, right
last
around
2 years, pretty much. Yeah, they had pretty good starts to the season. Then, like around January, towards the middle of the season, like mid-early season, they just fell off.
I mean, they had a stretch last year where they won, seven games in a row, eight games in a row, when they looked like they were rising up in the standings, possibly going to take that eighth seed, and then they lost, I think, like eight or nine in a row to counteract
that. The Knicks won seven in a row last year?
I might be wrong, but they had a decent win streak last year at some point.
They might have had a few, yeah. I didn't know if they know what seven. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what their attitude is. Like you said, Phil Jackson now is gone. Hornacek is still the coach. I haven't loved what I've seen it from Hornacek as a coach. I think they need to bring in someone with a stronger personality and someone that's going to incorporate a better defensive strategy and move the ball a little bit. But
so, you know, the Knicks signed Ramon Sessions. that was a pretty solid signing. I mean, they definitely needed a veteran point guard. Obviously, we mentioned their point guard is going to be an issue. He's at least somebody who can come in. But with the point guards around the league, I think this is going to be the Knicks' biggest issue is, you know, not being able to match up with them. But Sessions is a nice veteran to have around. I just don't know what he can really do for them at this point.
The one thing I can't say about Sessions is he's actually really good in the pick and roll. I know I saw somebody break it down on Twitter. I think it was Justin Jett. He just broke down some Sessions game film of how he handles the pick and roll on defense and on offense that he played with Charlotte last year. And I actually think, you know, with Porzingis and Herman Gomez, we could actually see him start to use them in the pick and roll. We know Rose obviously didn't use it to the best of his ability. He's not a very good facilitator. So Sessions actually, to a degree, can do things the Knicks haven't had done in recent years.
I agree, and that's the point I was trying to make. That's the point I was trying to make is that he's not awful in the pick and roll. He has a bit of a facilitation to his game. His IQ is higher than some of the guards the Knicks have had in the last couple of years. Is he an all-star? Absolutely not. But he's a guy there that playing 25 minutes a game could help out some of the Knicks scorers, could help that position out that the Knicks desperately need. So I think he's going to give them a nice little boost.
I think it was a move they had to make. They had to bring in a veteran. He's not a player you want starting. He's a player you want, like Harris mentioned, in a 20-minute role, like off the bench or something. But for the Knicks situation, they had really no choice.
Who knows? I mean, I think those first 10, 12 games are going to tell you a lot. But there's just no really way to tell what's going to happen here, except probably have a ceiling of like 35. Probably. That's what I'm thinking.
We'll talk about wins in a little bit. Let's talk departures before we get there.
And let me just say the Knicks' biggest win streak was actually only 4 games last year, not 7. So,
well, you were trying to be positive.
But they did win 4, lose 4, win 4, and then lose, like, you know, they had a couple nice little stints.
Yeah, that what you just described sounds a lot like Carmelo Anthony's tenure as a Knick.
More shade.
It's true.
I'm being real. It's frustrating. Listen, is Carmelo Anthony a talented basketball player? Absolutely. But it's just like I've said all podcasts, it's just so the Knicks fans are frustrated, man. And now they're not going to get their Christmas present. Kyrie Irving, man. Come on.
All right, let's talk departures real quick. We'll start with the big one. Obviously, Derrick Rose leaving and signing with the Cavs. You know, this was supposed to be a big deal last year, bringing in Derrick Rose. Obviously, he wasn't going to be the MVP we saw in Chicago. But they did expect a little bit more. I think team playing, they didn't expect him to kind of be such a scorer.
Thank God. Because he wanted max money. And my
How much money is he making in Cleveland?
Veteran minimum. He's making less than Ron Baker.
Holy. Yeah. He was a 2011 MVP, and now he's making less than Ron Baker.
He's not even over 30 yet, which it seems like he's old, but I think he's like 28 years old.
Well, his knees are 42.
Yeah, maybe 52.
Yeah. Really just unfortunate, though, because he doesn't seem like a terrible guy.
It's a win for the Knicks.
Absolutely. And I said this to Nick earlier. I said, I think this, without Rose, and it was a very weird 18 a game with the departure of Rose, I think that's just going to create a little bit more of the ball movement from that position that they need. And whether it's Baker or Sessions or Hardaway Jr. sliding over to do it, do they have a great point guard? No, but Derrick Rose is not a great NBA player either. So I think that's just going to, from a locker room standpoint and just from an overall basketball standpoint, I think this is a breath of fresh air. This is exactly what they need, and this is exactly what needed to happen.
Yeah, I don't think that they have great point guards or they have anybody who's probably as talented as Derrick Rose at point guard, but it's still like an addition by subtraction in the sense that he's the locker room guy. As soon as he kind of went MIA for that game, that was kind of the end of the Derrick Rose stint in New York. I just thought that was just like, it killed the Knicks season. It's just a terrible thing to happen. You know, you can't just not show up for an NBA game and not tell anybody. Yeah, so
even if it was family related, I think shoot a text. Him doing that. No, yeah, just tell somebody.
He was channeling his inner AI. That's all.
Yeah, that was weird. Just like like the Porzingis. I know Porzingis channeled his inner Derrick Rose by leaving and not going to that that meeting, the end of the year meeting.
I still think that was more of a FU to Phil than anything else.
That was an FU to Phil for the way he treated Carmelo Anthony.
Well, Derrick Rose was trying to say FU to somebody. We don't know who it was, but maybe it was Hornacek he was upset with. Derrick Rose was upset with somebody, probably.
Yeah.
there was rumors, because I think that was also the stretch where Hornacek had gone away from him in the late game situations. There's a few times where he was starting Brandon Jennings in deeper stretches in the fourth because Derrick Rose just couldn't cover anybody.
Yeah, and Brandon Jennings was more open to passing the ball. I think Derrick Rose's problem is that he never really understood, it's obviously hard to go from an MVP player to just being a role player, but I think Derrick Rose's best role is going to be a bench guy that comes off and gives you some points and gives you some energy, because as a starter in this league, his lack of passing ability, his lack of three-point shot, he can't be a starter anymore. So I think it works out for the Knicks. He wasn't an efficient guy, and like we said, he wasn't going to facilitate or make anybody better.
Can I just say, too, does Derrick Rose strike anyone else as not a very smart basketball player? Like a guy who early in his career got away with certain things because he was so athletically gifted?
I mean, I think it's a possibility when you look at it in the sense that I'm not saying he's stupid or anything. I'm just saying, he maybe doesn't have a great perspective as where he's at in the NBA. Just from the fact of saying something like, the Knicks are a super team. Anybody who really followed the NBA for the last 3 years would know that the Knicks weren't a super team, even with the people they signed.
Yeah, you're talking about probably at that height, at what was 6'3", 6'4", probably the best athlete at that size maybe ever in the NBA.
Yeah.
For that stretch. And that team won 62 games. Obviously, we know they didn't beat Miami in that playoff series, but that was one of the special seasons that I've ever seen. And he, like you said, not that great of an IQ. Obviously, not the Steve Nash IQ on the offensive end. Not a terrible defense when he wanted to be. Not a terrible defensive player because of his speed, but he could really get to anywhere on the floor. So he didn't have to be a knockdown 3-point shooter. He was getting anywhere he wanted to at on almost any possession, too.
Yeah. And let me tell you, he was one of the most fun players to ever use in 2K. When he was in the MVP type form, you got him in the paint and was a dunk on somebody. It was so easy to score.
you can almost really equivalent him to like Westbrook nowadays.
Pretty much.
With a freakish explosion. Explosion.
Yeah, probably even more explosive than Westbrook.
For his height, for sure. I mean, his bounce was insane.
Yeah.
It would have been cool to see them play each other at both of their primes.
Westbrook has more of like going off the 1-foot explosiveness. Rose had a lot of 2-foot explosiveness.
Yeah, which is rare. Rose, you don't necessarily see that as much. Yeah.
Rose liked to bring the ball back on, like hit the back of his head and throw the ball through the basket off 2 feet. It was really fun to watch. And it's sad what's happening. Like I know we joke around and we've been hard on this guy, we've been hard on that guy, but it really is. I mean, at least Carmelo has the Hall of Fame career. Derrick Rose is not a Hall of Famer, guys.
Yeah, that's tough for him too, because it looked like he was going to go down as being maybe possibly one of the, the all-time guys, maybe get into possibly like the top 10 the way his career was going. But move on to some other departures. Let's talk Justin Holiday. I thought this was a move where actually the Knicks probably made a mistake, because I like what I saw from Justin Holiday last year. I thought he was a young athletic wing. He could shoot a little bit. He actually played some defense and he brought some energy. I was surprised they didn't re-sign him, especially for the deal he signed with Chicago.
Best role player they had all last season. At least the most
consistent. Not Hernan Gomez?
All right. Best
bench player.
Well, Hernan Gomez came off the bench at the start. So.
But then he started majority at the end of the season.
Yeah. So Harris. Best bench player, Justin Holiday. Only because, like you said, Nick, it seemed to a degree a lot of the kickouts to open guys from the 3-point line. It seemed Justin Holiday was there for majority of them, and he didn't get as much time on the court as he probably should have got. But when he was on the floor, you could definitely feel his impact on the floor. But like you said, he has decent size and wings, wingspan, and I think he went to Chicago, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that's a steal for a young Chicago team that's trying to rebuild, having a guy like Holiday.
Well, how much is he making this upcoming year?
It was a small deal. It wasn't very big. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it was
4.4. He's making $4.6 million this year.
Yeah, so it's not a very big deal. I think also, I think the energy is a big part in the athletic ability. Maybe there's stuff we don't know about. Maybe he didn't get along with the team or didn't like what was going on with the Knicks and he didn't want to come back. We never know if players want to sign back with their team. You know what I mean? unless they publicly say it, but a young player is not really going to do that. But another departure, you know, I think this is Harris's favorite player on the Knicks last year, Saša Vujačić.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And, wait, and shout out to also shout out to Justin Holiday. Played in all 82 games last year, too. I think he was the
– That's tough.
Yeah, I think one of the few guys – I would double-check it, but obviously not many guys do that, and especially guys coming off the bench. He only started in 4 games, so shout out to him for playing in every single game last year.
You know what? Now that we're talking about Saša, he was one of the Knicks where I would turn on a game and I would just think in my head, like, is this how bad the Knicks are that this guy actually can somehow get minutes on an NBA team? I mean, that just says it all to me. Not that Ron Baker got minutes, but that Saša Vujačić got minutes on this Knicks team.
Well, especially at the age of his Vujačić at the end of his career, Vujačić. You know what I mean? Like, there was Phil wanted to
Vucevic,
bring him in.
I don't even know. Vucevic, Vujačić, who cares?
Yeah. I think Phil just really? It was the kind of guy that Phil wanted to bring in to kind of bring, you know, some culture, and he knows that he knows the triangle, and I think that's why he was there. Obviously, not being a triangle team anymore, I don't think it really matters. But let's talk about Phil. Phil obviously left.
Wait, can we talk about the fact that Saša Vujačić has 2 NBA rings also?
Hey, he was not a bad player, you know, his whole NBA career. You know, he's just at the end of his career. He's not moving well. He's not, you know, going to be a great guy.
Lakers, but he made some big shots in the playoffs with the Lakers.
Yeah, he had a stint with the Nets where he had some games where he really lit it up, too. Like, this guy can shoot. He can still shoot. It's just that he can't really do a lot of other things on the floor at his age.
Yeah, true.
But let's talk Phil. Phil Jackson obviously departed, and this guy kind of was supposed to bring in everybody, was so happy the Knicks brought him in. He was going to change his team. He was going to bring them back to the promised land, and things just did not go that way. And after, you know, he kind of offered to trade Porzingis and possibly on draft day, I think that's what kind of set James Dolan off, and that made him pull the trigger and finally let go of Phil.
Let me shed my fake tear right now. Phil Jackson leaving. It's a stint to forget. If you're Knicks fans, you can't completely hate this 10-year because at the end of the day, he is – without Phil Jackson, Porzingis is probably not in New York. And who knows where Porzingis ends up. That was the only bright spot, though, of this. We have to see about Frank. But, you know, he gave these awful contracts out, Joakim Noah and Courtney Lee. He ruined the chance of – well, Melo's still on the roster, but he ruined a relationship with a top-flight, all-star, Hall of Famer in this league in Carmelo Anthony that we already know jeopardized the possibility of Chris Paul coming this offseason. And who knows if had Chris Paul come, if LeBron maybe would.
Wait, what are you talking about? Blake Griffin just said the buzz in the Garden and the Mecca that LeBron might be a Knick in a couple years.
Well, LeBron would only become a Knick.
I think LeBron came off to, I think came out either today or yesterday and shrugged off the comments. Yeah. So,
I mean, obviously the big story is will the banana boat get together? And not that the Knicks would land the banana boat, but they'd have the best possibility if Phil Jackson hadn't tarnished a relationship with Carmelo Anthony, because this is the window for that reunion of those four guys to get together is likely to happen.
Yeah, and you know what? What was the moral of the story? 11 championships as a coach does not necessarily mean you will have any success in your front office. And that's what we learned today. And listen, having Michael Jordan might not be a bad thing to have on your roster. And also having Kobe Bryant and Shaq for some of those too. So having coaching success in this league will not translate to success in the front office.
I think that's the thing too, that people just kind of expected him to be, you know, since he was great at coaching.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were like, you know what, Phil, you fucked up the Knicks. I want you to coach a team now. And, you know, a lot of Knicks fans wanted that to happen. They want to be like, you know, they want to run the triangle so bad. You go coach the team and make it happen.
He physically couldn't.
Yeah.
Physically couldn't. And now, you know, where is he? In North Dakota or some crap?
Yeah, and he did a lot of questionable things where I think he was, like, on vacations during, like, free agency periods or, like, draft periods.
I saw him with his gun and he was shooting in the rain and stuff like that. I'm like, dude, fix this team. What are you doing? Stop shooting up crap.
I can say the one thing that always bothered me about Phil was certainly the focus on trying to get this triangle offense to run. You know, in a new age of basketball where you see guys, you know, pushing the tempo, hitting those transition threes and focusing on, you know, a faster tempo. The triangle is a slower pace style of offense. It's a more of a slow you down type of thing. And when you're not coaching the team and you keep bringing in guys like Jeff Hornacek, this guy has no experience with a triangle offense, and you're trying to make him run not his offense but your offense, and you're not even the one that's coaching the team on an 82-game scheduled basis. You know, it's a cluster. It's a cluster F. This wasn't a complete mess, the Phil Jackson era of the Knicks.
So they did let go of him, and they brought in Scott Perry, vice president from the Kings. You know, he's coming in as a GM. Steve Mills, I think, was promoted to basketball operations, and Steve Mills is technically a James Dolan guy, so that's something to keep an eye on, because that means James Dolan still has some impact on the franchise. But Scott Perry did some good things in Sacramento. He was only there for a few months, but most of the moves they made this offseason before he left were great. The draft they had was great, so maybe he can come in and stabilize that Knicks front office. Obviously, I think there still has to be changes, because from what I've read, there's still a good amount of guys that Phil Jackson brought in. So maybe he kind of gets some more power and pushes them out. But it's tough to say with Steve Mills still having power and James Dolan still having input.
Yeah, Steve Mills, I mean, he's another guy who doesn't seem to really be a big fan of Carmelo Anthony. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, he was one of the guys laughing at the video with Carmelo working out in a hoodie.
Right.
So yeah, you know what?
We'll have to see what that is.
Sorry, keep going, Gord.
No, that was my point. Just we'll have to see what that has, you know, how much of a factor that plays in with, you know, Melo in the future.
I wanted to go this whole podcast without mentioning James Dolan because he also went to the same university that I did. So I'm not very proud of that fact. And I think he's one of the top five worst owners in professional sports. I'll say that, not saying he's a bad guy, but that's my honest opinion. Could be. I don't know him, but that's my opinion. And based off what this team has become since the late 90s, early 2000s, the Knicks have been pretty much the joke of the league. Outside of making the playoffs and getting swept by the Nets and then making the playoffs again in 2013 and losing to Corey's Pacers. How about that?
That is ironic.
Knicks-Nets and Corey's Pacers, and those are their only two playoff appearances. And other than that, it's been an absolute joke. And listen, I've always thought for a long time that Isaiah Thomas had blackmail on James Dolan for the fact that all these breaks that he gave Isaiah throughout that coaching tenure, and then I think he was going to come back after all that. I don't know. That was a mess of a situation, the whole Isaiah Marbury thing. And, you know, there's just been embarrassment after embarrassment after embarrassment. And I'm hoping that somehow it could get better, because I think the city deserves great basketball. Nick, you know this, now that the Nets are in Brooklyn, there's nothing quite like New York playoff basketball. It's really special. And so hopefully for these fans and for everybody in New York, something changes. But it just hasn't been the case of late. It just has not been the case.
Let's move on from there. Let's go to breakout players. Who's going to be your breakout player this year? Let's start with our starter. Who do you think is going to, you know, come out and light things up?
I'm going to say Porzingis. Only because I do believe Melo will not start. Well, he might actually end up being on the roster, but I don't believe Melo is going to be on this team the entire season. So I believe at some point this year, we will see Porzingis become the focal point of this offense.
Yeah, I think that's the obvious one, but I'm going to go with Hardaway Jr.
I knew it.
Say that. I know. Listen, I'm Porzingis have a good season. But I think Hardaway Jr. is going to be a little bit better than you guys think. So I'm going to ride the Hardaway Jr. train, and I'm going to go out on the limb and make a bold prediction that he's going to average 18 this year for the Knicks.
Whoa. I mean, if they trade Melo, he's going to get a lot of shots. So that's a real possibility. I'm going to go with Porzingis. You know, I've always been a fan of this guy since, you know, his rookie season with the Knicks, even though I hate them. I think just his impact on the game, and like Corey said, if Melo leaves, it's going to just open up so many things for Porzingis, and it's going to allow him to develop his game. He could struggle a little bit without Melo on the floor, you know, getting extra attention, but it's going to only help him moving forward and become the player that we expect him to become.
We'll see. I think if you lose Melo, you see more of a post-game Porzingis develop. I think he won't be able to get as many open looks on the line. He'll have to go down low and body some people, or at least try and bully.
Don't forget about my my Norfolk State guy, Kyle O'Quinn, who played in 79 games last year. I also like what he does off the bench for them. And I'm not even kidding.
I wouldn't be surprised if they moved him, because I think that he could provide a decent value to another team. And I was surprised that they didn't try to move him last year at some point.
I think they like him. I think they think he could be part of a bench for them. I really do. I think they want to keep him around. Dude, listen, he wasn't like a great offensive player, but another guy, I'll put him in like the Hernan Gomez, Ron Baker, Justin Holiday category. If they did have some guys, and that's the reason why you looked at them and they did hang around in a lot of those games and win 31 of them, because they did have some guys off the bench that were playing hard. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see him make an impact this year either.
You got a logjam, though. There's so many big men in that Joakim Noah contract. I just don't know. I mean, like Nick said, he might be able to give enough value so you can add a guard or something like that.
Or a younger player or a pick or something. Yeah. Not necessarily a high pick, but, you know, at least some value for a young team. Because they're not going to move Hermann Gomez, because obviously he's a young stud. And then Joakim, we know they can't move him. So Kylo Quinn probably seems like the most reasonable. What do you guys think about a breakout bench player?
Oh, breakout bench player. Oh, wow. This is... I'm going to say Lance Thomas. And because Lance Thomas last year, the year before last year, he had the knee injury, I believe.
That killed him.
Yeah, he looked really good before the knee injury. Last year, he didn't look that good. But he was last week there was that workout video with Hoodie, Melo, LeBron, and Kevin Durant playing that, you know, that super team pickup game. I don't know if you guys saw that. Yeah. Yeah, all those guys got together. JR is there.
Chris Brickley is the trainer that does that. I'll give him a follow on Instagram if you want to check out all the videos. Chris Brickley's his name, and he trains like a ton of the top NBA guys. I've seen him train Kevin Durant, LeBron. You know,
yeah. Even, what's with this? I didn't mean to go off topic. What's with the Kevin Durant with Kilpatrick thing?
Oh yeah, Sean Kilpatrick, Caris LeVert been working out. Steve Nash. It just seems like a lot of NBA guys are working out together, which is great for the game, because you know you're not going to get better competing against lower level players. You're going to get better competing against the top guys in the league.
I don't like the friendliness though. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Huh? It's not friendly everywhere though.
Yeah.
No. There are going to be some Listen. Just for starters, Kyrie's going to open up in Cleveland for game one. So
yeah, that's going to be huge and exciting. But let's get on the Knicks before we go to this pod for 2+ hours. For me, I guess the bench breakout guy. This is a tough one because I don't know necessarily who the starters are going to be. I mean, Kyle O'Quinn could be a solid guy off the bench, but maybe Frank Ntilikina off the bench will show some things later in the season. It's not like they have a ton of bench guys that are really intriguing in the sense that, you know, they're young guys that you expect to really improve. But I think Frank Ntilikina would be a guy to keep an eye on. And, you know, maybe if they get another young guy, I could definitely see them moving, like Corey said, Courtney Lee, or I mentioned Kylo Quinn, and maybe picking up a young guy to bring off the bench who could have a nice season. Let's get your starter predictions. Who do you think is going to be the opening night starters for the Knicks? We'll do one lineup with Melo and then one lineup without Melo.
All right, my lineup with Melo is going to be, I think Frank starts off the bat.
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so either.
Too young.
No,
too
Sessions.
Raw.
Sessions
is really going to be the starting.
Sessions.
All right, so you got Sessions.
Yeah.
And then Hardaway Jr., Melo, Porzingis, and I guess if Joakim Noah is healthy, you put him.
No, it can't be Noah because he's suspended for the
first 10 games. Well. All right, minus the first 10 games, I think Noah does become the starter when he comes back.
I'd rather start Hernan Gomez, but that's just me.
I just don't know if you have that $72 million come off the bench. I mean, granted, if you're better with Hernan Gomez on the floor, right? Granted, but I think it's still Joakim Noah's job to lose. I think you still have to give him a chance when he comes back after those 10 games.
Harris, you give your lineup. I'll give mine a sec.
All right, yeah, Sessions, Hardaway Jr., Melo, Porzingis, and Hernan Gomez.
Same exact one for me. I think they go with Hermann Gomez just because, you know, they say, you know, forget it, whatever. We know Noah's going to be trash. Let's give this kid some minutes. Yeah. He's actually a better player than Joakim Noah is. And I think they go with Ramon Sessions. I wouldn't be surprised if Frank starts later in the year, possibly. Yeah. But I think Sessions, they want to have a veteran to run the show early on. Let's hear your lineup without Melo.
Without Melo, it's going to be Sessions, Hardaway Jr., either Courtney Lee or Lance Thomas. And then Porzingis, and then, you know, you guys are thinking Hermann Gomez. I'm still going to say Joakim Noah for, you know, after those 10 games.
without Melo, Beasley could slide in there potentially. It's a possibility. I would still say Sessions, Hardaway Jr., Lance Thomas, Porzingis, and Hernan Gomez. And if Hernan Gomez isn't playing that well and they want to give Noah that opportunity, they can. Kyle O'Quinn will probably get a couple starts. And like I said, Beasley will probably get a few starts. Baker could start at a couple games at point guard, and so could obviously the rookie.
Personally, I would start Kyle O'Quinn before I would start Joakim Noah. I would probably go with no Melo. I'm going to go Ramon Sessions, Tim Hardaway Jr. I would possibly think about starting Courtney Lee. I think Courtney Lee and Lance Thomas would be a toss-up because, you know,
Courtney Lee is pretty small to play with Tim Hardaway, though.
Yeah, but I think, you know, around the league, teams are caring less about size and just going with, you know, what's going to make our offense the best, because the Knicks are, you know, not a lot of teams in the league are going to be playing two big guys in Willie Herman Gomez or Kristaps Porzingis. So they would have some size down there. And the Knicks actually were a pretty good rebounding team last year, too. So I think that could be something to keep an eye on. But I think that it could possibly change, too, by the end of the year. Like I mentioned to you off pod, Harris, I think if they trade Melo, it would just make a whole bunch more sense to go with the youth movement and, like Corey said, and kind of tank a little bit, play all the young guys big minutes, let them develop that chemistry you know you need for championship teams moving forward, and end up with a top five pick or something instead of, you know, even if the Knicks were to hypothetically get into the playoffs, they're just going to get swept in the first round.
Yeah, you know, maybe get a game or maybe two, but
I don't know, against LeBron.
Oh, no, it depends. It depends. Oh, yeah, Boston, Cleveland will both sweep them probably. But but Carmelo, to me, at 33, it kind of feels like 35. I mean, I don't know, man. 33 is still supposed to be, you know, like tail end of the prime. Guys say prime, they say like, what, 27 to 32, 33, you know. Carmelo's 33.
One thing that gives Melo a lot of value at an old age is, you know, not to say he's old right now, but as he progresses, is that he's still an elite shooter. You know, like this guy can get super hot, and like a lot of the time the shots he takes are contested. Just imagine if he was in a system like we mentioned, Houston, where he would be getting open shots, coming off screens, getting set up by Chris Paul and James Harden. It'd be fun to watch.
That would be dynamic, but I mean, it's catch 22 for me, and I've said it many times with this. Is it the guys not wanting to come play there? Is it him? Is it his fault? Is it not his fault? Has he been as good as he can be in New York? What could be better? What could be around him? It might just be the time to say, you know what? This hasn't worked. Let him move on for the last few years of his career and try to win a championship.
So yeah, I think go ahead, Corey.
I just think the one thing about Melo is I think he's – the best case scenario for Melo is him playing the four as he gets older.
Yeah, because he's got a big body too.
Right, and we saw him, you know, back, you know, bully Melo. You know, he's able to use his body down low. He's decent in the post. And I think that's one thing that the Knicks didn't do much of last year. I mean, they ran Porzingis a little bit at the five. But I think, you know, the best Knicks lineup with Melo would be a Porzingis, Melo, and then let's say a Courtney Lee, Tim Hardaway Jr., and then, you know, Sessions.
Or even if you want to play, you know, like Harris possibly mentioned, Hardaway Jr., a touch at point guard, or Courtney Lee, not that say that they're great facilitators, but you just want to throw up a lineup with like Tim Hardaway Jr., Courtney Lee, Lance Thomas, Carmelo Anthony, and Kristaps Porzingis. It provides you some nice versatility.
Because Melo can't guard.
We didn't.
He's too slow to guard at this day and age.
We didn't speak on the Duke product that much, but I think Lance Thomas had a pretty good year last year for the Knicks.
No, last year he was injured most of. You're thinking about the year before where he did have a good year. And then he got injured.
Well, last year he only played 46 games and averaged 6 points a game. But the year before that, 59 games. So he hasn't really played a full season either. But the year before that, you're right, he was averaging.
He needs to get healthy. That's his issue. Yeah. He showed some nice stuff. You know, like he worked on his game a lot. And I was like, wow, you know, Lance Thomas looks like he's a solid 3-and-D type guy. And then all of a sudden the injury just really hurt him.
He started – it's funny because he played like 22 games with the Thunder the year that he played 40 with the Knicks a couple years ago. But he started 15 games last year. And then the year before that, the year you're thinking of, he was better off the bench.
Yeah.
So I think they'll definitely use him off the bench. I don't think they'll have any intention of starting him this year.
I don't think I ever finished my point before when I said he was my breakout player. But he looked really good in those videos that we mentioned briefly.
But a lot of guys do.
Yes. But he just looked like he had more bounce. I saw him dunk in a couple of those videos as well. He just looked to have more bounce in his step. And obviously, you know, who knows how fast of a speed those guys are really balling at.
Hey, but listen, I've dunked in a couple videos. Photoshop is an amazing thing, Corey.
I don't think Lance Thomas is photoshopping stuff.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. You can't put too much. You can't put too much into that.
I just think if his knee, you know, after missing time last year, if his knee is even, you know, remotely close to what it was that year before, where he had a decent year with the Knicks, I think the Knicks are getting a very solid player back, healthy.
Yeah, health is the big issue for him. That's true. But let's move on to predictions.
I got 1%. Sorry.
All right, well, if we lose Harris, guys, you know, he's at 1% on the cell phone, so let's get that best-case scenario. Well, Harris, you give your best-case scenario, worst-case, and your realistic wins, and then Corey and I will do ours.
Yeah, yeah. My best-case scenario, like I told you before, I think is like 35 or 36 wins, and maybe even a couple more if they got hot and, like, Snipes trying to sneak in as the 8 or 9 seed, 10 seed, but I don't see that happening. Obviously, it's a high, high ceiling. The worst-case scenario is like a 20 – even though this probably wouldn't be awful because it would be a draft pick, but I could see them getting as low as 26, 27, 28 wins. But realistically, right in the middle of where they were last year, 31, 32, 33. I actually, if I had to make a prediction, I would say the Knicks are going to go 33 and 49.
Corey, what's your picks?
Best case scenario, the Knicks win probably, you know, between 33 and 35 games. That's with Melo. I don't think if they don't have – I think if they lose Melo, they're looking at high 20s to barely getting into the 30s without Melo. So my worst-case scenario would probably be right around 25 wins, and that's also with them losing Melo, getting a decent draft pick. But my actual prediction is going to be right around – I'm going to say 30 and 52.
So almost the same as last year for me. I'm agreeing with the best case. I think, you know, that 35 wins is probably a cap, but that's probably if they keep Melo and they'll be in that contention for an 8 seed just because the East is so bad. ESPN, as I mentioned on the pod before, is projected as the 8 seed as being around 35 wins. So it's a real possibility.
I think it's going to be a little higher than that. Maybe
yeah, I mean, it probably will be a little bit higher, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's under 500.
Yeah.
But moving on to worst case for me, I would probably say low 20s. You know, they trade Melo. Maybe Kristaps gets hurt for a couple games and they're a real dumpster fire. And they end up with a top pick, which is kind of like a best case because even best case winning those games doesn't really do anything for you. Realistically, I think if they have Melo, they'll be around 30 wins. If they don't have Melo, realistically, I think they'll be in the mid 20s.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting for sure.
I think, like we said, like, you know, I hate to say it again, but all, you know, the Knicks whole season kind of depends on if they trade Melo, if they're able to get any type of value. Obviously, we know what Phil Jackson did to the leverage for the Knicks to fill Carmelo's value. So if they're able to get any type of decent player or some picks, it would definitely be a bonus.
Yep.
Yeah. You got to, you know, with this deal, you know, if you do move Melo, you have to take what you can get at this point because with the no trade clause, you're not going to get the best deal out there.
Yeah, exactly. And he's determining, and he's only opened up to Houston at this point. I mean, they're trying to get him to open up to other teams, maybe Portland, but I don't think that's unlikely. But let's move on to one of our favorite segments, Third Year Doing It, The Truth. Mm. The emoji today for the Knicks is going to be those two girls dancing because Phil Jackson is gone. So Knicks fans can finally have hope.
Oh, wow. The two girls dancing. Does that mean that the male fan base has given up and there's only females now rooting for the Knicks?
No, I mean we're about diversity here at OTG, so you know I got to show the females on here, not just males.
No, absolutely.
So we got girl fans too.
That's
a
requirement for my future wife. She's got to at least watch 25 NBA games a year minimum.
Yeah,
wow. I like it. Get a little, you know, set the bar at a certain level.
I'm just messing.
Cynthia knows when the NBA season starts and ends. You know, it makes a big deal on the TV.
How many basketball games is she watching a year, Nick?
Honestly, she watches a lot because I watch hundreds of games. So Cynthia is stuck watching probably, you know, a good chunk of Nets games. She's not really as interested in a lot of teams. She's not that interested in the Nets because they're not very good last year, but she knows the big names. She knows Golden State. She knows Steph Curry. She knows KD. She was hyped as I was when KD hit that three in LeBron's face in game 3 of the finals. So she knows when it,
wow.
And actually, I'll tell you something funny.
That's how you know she's a keeper.
I'll tell you something funny today. I was sending a text to somebody, deal done, about the Kyrie going to Boston. And I sent it to her by accident. I was like, yo, Kyrie traded for IT. And she knew exactly what I was talking about. So she's starting to get her stuff. And she's hopping in our fantasy football league this year.
Unbelievable. Good for her.
Jack of all trades. That's what she
– Yes. Versatility is key.
Yeah, but I like that. I like that. Honestly, with Phil out, there's one more probably that Knick fans want to see. It's unfortunate that it didn't work out. But I think once Melo goes, it's almost like, okay, now we know what direction we can move in, giving him an opportunity to win a ring like we've said a few times on this pod. But Phil is step one, and then maybe Melo's step two, because I don't think they'll be able to build around Carmelo. I think it will take too long. And they'll probably have to try to build around Kristaps.
Yeah, Melo has them in this weird spot where some fans want them to try to get into the playoffs, and other fans want them to trade him and kind of go with that youth movement, and that's what they should do. But before Harris's phone side, let's go to league pass rating.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I got the Charger, so I'm good.
Okay, league pass rating. Where do we think the Knicks are in terms of 1 to 10? And Harris, if you didn't know, my scale is skewed for the Warriors. The Warriors are a 10, and no team is a 9 because the Warriors are on another level.
Okay, so no team could be a 9.
That's my scale. You guys have your own scales, but that's how I'm viewing things. Oh,
okay. Because the Warriors to me were the reason why I started. I mean, I was a league pass guy when Nash was on the Suns. I was like, okay, that's the team I want to watch, and like the Warriors took on that identity even in like 2011, 2012. They started showing signs of being that team. But there's usually those teams out west where you're like, okay, I got to – you know, Minnesota's coming into their own and becoming a team like that. But for the Knicks, you want my league pass rating?
Yeah, 1 through 10.
Well, because I don't even have to go on league pass and I have them on MSG, that changes it a little bit. But as far as 1 to 10, 10 being the Warriors and 1 being the worst team in the league, I think the Knicks are like a 3.5.
Fair.
That's fair. I'm going to say with Melo, this team's a 3.5 or a 4. Without Melo, they're a 2.5 to a 3.
I feel like we've said that so many times today, with or without. You know, it's just an unbelievable situation.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, for me, I think they're about a 4 because I want to watch Kristaps Porzingis and I want to see what Tim Hardaway Jr. does in New York and see if Frank Ntilikina is going to play any minutes or he's going to spend a lot of time in the G League or, you know, and if Melo's there and what happens with him. You know, if the Knicks want to play chippy and they want to play hard, Harris mentioned that he thinks, you know, if Melo is there and, you know, the team's playing chippy and they have some guys that maybe are like, you know, maybe we could squeeze into the playoffs.
Yeah.
So they're probably a 4 what? For me.
Because my so many of my family and friends are huge. I mean, obviously when I was younger, I was big into the Knicks. As I got older, it got different. I had a lot of things going on. But when so many of my family and friends are texting me about them, it becomes maybe a higher number because I just want to know what's going on in the city also. And like you said, with Porzingis and Hardaway Jr. So I think 3.5 is where I feel like, but I think early on in the year, I'll watch them almost every night and then maybe it'll start higher and then probably at some point get lower.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. We're all from New York here in this pod, and we all are going to watch a good amount of Knicks games. It's not necessarily we enjoy watching them. It's that we just kind of want to conversate with our friends and, you know the vibes of the city and things
Corey,
like that.
And Corey had George leave, so he's got to watch something else.
You know?
Nobody's safe.
You're right. I get to watch the Celtics now, who are new and improved. That's going to be
interesting. Okay.
So what would you watch the New York Knicks over? What TV show that you like? So Harris, like a TV show that you like, but you'll watch the Knicks over that instead.
Okay. So I don't watch a ton of TV, but my favorite show ever, just to preface this statement, is Curb Your Enthusiasm. I don't even think I'd watch the Warriors over them because I enjoy laughing more than I enjoy watching a ball go in a hoop. But I would probably say the show that I'm currently watching now that's gotten a lot worse since it started, Ballers, is terrible now. So
HBO, he's coming for you too.
Listen, I loved Ballers early on. I was like, season one, this is Entourage, but the football version. But The Rock has disappointed me. I will rather watch the Knicks than The Rock right now.
Wow. You know, Corey, it's funny. I'm pretty sure that just got really good views too, like reviews. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You're thinking of a different show, I think.
No, it had its highest. I think it had its highest season opener for this year, but I don't know if it's gotten worse or better from the progress of the first episode.
I know the second episode got better than the first episode because the Rocky ended.
I don't know. I'll continue to watch just because once I start a show, I'll finish it. But I'm really disappointed right now, guys. Really disappointed.
All right. So for me, a show I'd watch, I would watch the Knicks over. I'm not a really big, like a Family Guy kind of person. Oh. I'd watch it over the spinoff of the Cleveland show.
Oh, and I thought the question was, what show would you rather watch? You'd watch the Knicks over the show, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd watch the Knicks for the Cleveland show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For me, let's go. This is a tough one. I've been throwing shades at a lot of big TV shows. I mean, I watch the Knicks, but I don't like necessarily like always want to watch them. I just watch them to watch them, if that makes sense. So I'll go with like a show that I don't necessarily like to watch, but maybe Cynthia watches or something like that. So let's go with Modern Family.
Ooh, I like Modern Family.
I know. I like to throw shade at TV shows. I'm a critic.
Hey, listen, I know I threw a little bit of a shade at the roster and some of the things that they've done. All these people, owners, coaches, are more successful than me. It's just a very frustrating time in New York.
As of right now.
Well, yeah, who knows? But you know what? A lot of frustration. And I think that comes through, you know, Corey. And I'm not trying to be a negative person, but a lot of that frustration comes through because – it's the Mecca. It's MSG. Who knows? Maybe the Knicks go 41-41.
Trying to get some more followers or something?
Trying to get the Knicks fans off my back.
It's definitely frustrating because, you know, my dad's a Knicks fan. So, you know, I come home and I say, you watch the Knicks game. And he goes, no, I turn it off after the first quarter.
Yep.
You know, I haven't had that issue yet, you know, luckily with my team where I've had to turn it off. I'm expecting a year similar to that coming up for me.
Yep.
But I can only imagine, you know, not being able to watch full basketball games because you're just never in it, really.
And my dad, like you just said, is a big, big Knicks fan. Being that he's a former pro athlete, shout out to my dad. I love throwing that out there and giving him the compliment. But
Give him some more love. Throw out the details.
Yeah, what's that?
Former NFL player.
Yeah.
I said show him some more love.
Okay, yeah. Three games for the Patriots in the lockout in 1987. Went from Division III to the NFL. So one of my heroes in life. And shout out to my dad for giving me a lot. So, but he's one of the biggest Knicks fans I've ever seen and know. And he's passionate about the Knicks. So I feel bad for him right now. And I was like that as a kid, but I'm a lot less emotional now.
But as you get older, you kind of realize, like, all right, this basketball game is not going to determine if I'm in a bad mood or a good mood for the next few days.
Yeah, exactly. I value happiness over anything else in life, over money, over this, over basketball, everything, like I just said. So, but I for the Knicks' sake, he texted me and he said, listen, I would love for the Knicks to deal Melo, go in a different direction and become fun to watch again. And he doesn't like watching them with Melo. He doesn't think it's fun.
And it'll be always good. It's always not, like, there's some enjoyment in a rebuild. Like me watching the Nets, it's like easy when they lose games because they're in a rebuild. And the only thing that I'm worried about is youth development. So they could win, you know, not 30 games. And as long as the players are still getting better, you can see positive. But when you have a team that's expecting, has expectations, and they don't make the playoffs, that's when you get upset.
And just from following some of those Net players on Instagram, you get the idea that they care about the game, though. So you also just want to see, as a Knicks fan, you want to see guys in the locker room that care about the game, that care about getting better, and that aren't bad for the environment and aren't bad for the locker room. And you get the idea that, like, Beasley has that, you know, that bad reputation, kind of like a Brandon Marshall in football and stuff like this. So you get the idea that, oh, I don't want this guy to come in and ruin it. So hopefully there's some positivity going around and guys start to like each other. They get some camaraderie going. So there's some of that in Brooklyn, and hopefully it translates.
I think Zach Lowe said in a post last year that Brooklyn was the happiest bad team he's ever seen.
Who said that?
And that's pretty – Zach Lowe.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, that's a pretty cool thing to see. You know, like, even though they're bad and they had the worst record in the league, they still like each other and they're still good team commodity. So, but that wraps it up for the Knicks before we go up to 2 hours. Thank you, Harris. Thank you, Corey, for hopping on. And as always, thanks everybody for listening. And catch the next episode, number 26.
A lot of fun, guys. Yeah, it was a pleasure to come on with you guys, and a lot of fun, obviously, talking about the beloved New York Knicks. So catch you guys later, man.
Harris, we love having you on. The only thing I can say is, you know, if you keep bashing the Pacers and throwing shade, you know.
you know I'm messing with you, man. I'm just disappointed. I'm disappointed. I know how much you love those Indiana Pacers. I'm disappointed.
All right, guys, we're out.